And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Plus minus.
Bang! Bang! Oh, what a shot!
Tim Kawakami deserves all the credit.
Plus minus.
That is a word right there. What'd you say?
Fluffle.
Plus minus.
Yeah, like you, Marcus Thompson.
Marcus always tell the truth. Plus minus.
The only thing that I would say to Ethan Strauss is that he's a pretty damn good reporter. He's well
plus
respected.
Minus. I think he got the highest plus minus in the season in NBA history.
Welcome back to Warriors Plus Minus. We've got the entire crew here. The biggest win of the year to talk about, man. This is like the most positive Warriors world has been in a long time. We've got the boss man, Tim Kawakami, with us.
Check that title. We're going to have to change that one.
Nope. We're keeping it. We've got superstar Ethan Strauss.
Check that title also.
I kind of like that title.
Yeah, I kind of want to keep that title.
And obviously the most important of the entire operation, the beat writer, Anthony Slater. Slater, I'll start with you. There was some pretty good vibes after the game. It felt like Steve Kerr got his revenge against all of the social media angst, right? Is that what you took away from that game?
If they're down 10-3 against the Spurs on Wednesday, I don't think people are going to be like, well, but they came back against the Warriors. Steve's
remember
fine.
The Lakers win? That won't be the hashtag.
Good luck telling that to Andy Liu. He's going to say what he's going to say.
Come on, it all paid off, right? The Oubre patience, the lineup, like he made the lineup like Steve Kerr winning his bag. No?
He doesn't get like, oh, great move, Steve. It's more like, why didn't you do it earlier, Steve? See, we were right.
And why are you playing Wiseman? What are you doing? It changes. It's fluid. It's very fluid. But I watched that game, if I can interrupt here, the most important person. Kerr's patience is what we're watching here. I mean, he's patient with these guys. He's especially patient with like role players. And we're seeing that with, you know, Oubre and Wiggins had a slow start. He's going to go with them. You know, Wanamaker was bad for like four games there and he stuck with him. And we're seeing like, hey, if I'm going to get anything that we need out of Oubre, I got to stay with him. And we're seeing him get some things out of Oubre by kind of mixing him around a little bit. Now moving him to the second unit, which I believe one person on this podcast was definitely calling for a while. Guys looked good at, you know, and just kind of flourishing under Steve Kerr, as we've seen over the seasons. That's why, like, hey, four games isn't enough to judge this team. Maybe it does take the 20 games that Steve Kerr talked about, and now they're what? They're at 13? So seven more games still left for Steve Kerr to fill out this team.
That's what's funny. It's only been 13 games. If you know, it feels like we're like deep into some marathon where like so many definitive things can be taken. You know how small of a sample 13 NBA games is? Especially with the first four didn't come without or with Draymond Green, and the 13 have come with a 19-year-old rookie who has 95 things being thrown at him at once.
And it came after a 9-month break. You know, I mean, again, there was going to be things they have to discover.
I would push back a little bit. You're right. It's a small sample size, but it's a more meaningful sample size when you're not as good as you used to be. Back in the day, whatever issue they were having during the dynastic run, you could say, hey, it's a small sample size, don't overreact, blah, 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 blah. But at this level of skill they have and talent, you go into a little nosedive, you're not going to make the playoffs. So in a way, yes, it's only 13 games, but every game feels a little more meaningful than it did in the seasons where you could just rubber stamp them to the finals.
72-game season, so that, you know, that shrinks it a little bit too. But I think generally, I think the point is this team was going to, they got a lot of new faces and they've got a lot of things they got to figure out. And it was going to take some time. And they're not all the way there yet right now either. I think they're going to go through some bumps still.
They were like never in control of that game until they won it. I mean, that was a theft, you know, and it was a happy theft.
Some of that was the Lakers chilling. You know, they do that. The Lakers do that.
This is one of the most kind of, you know, placid LeBron James games I've seen. Like, he usually gets up for the Warriors game, and I don't know that he got up for this one.
Anthony Davis's defense, I mean, he is an incredible defensive player, and I felt like he was escorting the Warriors to the rim at certain points of the game.
But the Warriors did it. They took it. Like, it'd be worse if they'd lost a game against a disinterested Laker team that was that gave it up and that played hard in the first quarter.
That was the thing, you know? I think. If you watch the Lakers, they do this a lot. They, like, mess around. They play with their food. And then at the end, you know, they win the game. And this time at the end, it was Steph Curry and Draymond Green, right? Like, that was a little bit different, I thought.
The second unit won this game. And the second unit has won them. They won the Clippers game, too. And those are their two best games of the season. They're good right now.
Eric Paschal, MVP.
I need Slaker come on this. What happened to Markieff Morris in this game? Does that happen to him where he plays one stint and that's it?
He's not that good. I mean, he's the worst of the twin brothers. He makes sense as a spacing five when they want to play Davis basically at the center and have a spacing big next to him. But he's a minimum player. I just thought
he was like somebody in the rotation, and then he plays 6 minutes, gets hammered, and then he doesn't play again.
Vogel's pretty amenable to change within rotations, even within games, if stuff's not working. I just don't think he liked Morris on the floor against that Warrior second unit, because that's the one thing about this Warrior second unit. They're very different than most second units. They don't even have a center out there to start the second quarters, and they're just... They're kind of these, like, bullying, somewhat floor spacers that play with high energy, attack downhill. And then they have Paschal, who's just kind of feast with, you know, within this environment.
Little parallel, like David Lee getting injured at the beginning of that 2014-2015 season. I wonder if the Chris injury has inspired, and you got to give Kerr and the coaching staff credit, opening up this off-the-bench five-man role for Paschal. It's completely changed his season, it feels like. I don't know if he
might have changed his career path, possibly.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, Bogut was saying on his podcast that Draymond was going to be on a plane for Europe had the David Lee thing not happened. I'm not sure if that's the case, but little things can change the trajectory of a career.
That's not the case.
It's
going to be on a plane for Europe. These little things can change the trajectory.
We need to add Bogut to the drink list, by the way.
Yes. Oh, then we'd be drunk in 20 minutes.
Now that he's in the meteor. But these little things can change the trajectory of a career. And Paschal was looking like he did not fit in the rotation at all. And now he has this new job. And he's almost bringing it was funny because Montrez on the other team, he's almost has that kind of role for the Warriors in a way that Montrez had with the Clippers. So that's a nice thing to see.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of two things. It was Draymond slow to come back. Like, Draymond's still not playing full Draymond minutes. Maybe in the second half he did, but not really, because he's coming out at the end of the first quarter. He's not coming back in until Steph comes in. So he's taking a longer rest than usual. So Paschal gets those minutes, and then he gets the center minutes to start the second unit. That's because of Chris. He's kind of two things that kind of happen. And a guy that you didn't, you know, a lot of us didn't see a huge role for, now suddenly has, the third most important role on the team? I mean, it is Steph, Draymond, Paschal, and, you know, right there with Wiggins. That's a huge, huge move for a guy. And give him credit. He was ready for it, and he's just going. I mean, he is clearly unafraid of the moment. He's clearly stepping into this and say, okay, I got this. And it's very, very good to see from out of a player.
I assume opposing adjustments will come. I'm surprised how long opponents have let their backup center guard him. You know, if I was coaching against the Eric Paschal second unit, I would probably put the center on, you know, whoever. Name one of the wings, Bazemore or something. I understand that, you know, there's guys who can...
Jordan Poole.
Briefly, he was in. But you know that unit wants him one-on-one going downhill against a big. Like, that is their number one goal. So, you know, and that's part of the regular season, right? This isn't a playoff series. Teams aren't adjusting game to game. They're mostly just showing up at the arena going, wait, who are we playing tonight? Okay, yeah, sure, whatever. You know, it's working. It'll probably keep working. You know, he's starting to get early, you know, a little bit, tiny bit of sixth man of the year buzz. He's going to have to continue this, you know, game after game after game. But I think he had 19 points in 19 minutes last night, which is...
On a pretty big stage. A lot of people watching. You know, that was a hell of a game. And they need it if the first unit isn't.
Jeez, you know, TK, yeah. That sounds like you're trying to trade him right there. Oh, big stage, everybody watching. He's boosting the trade value.
Good for the trade value is something I thought. Good for the trade value.
It's good for everybody. If he increases his trade value, he increases his own value, and that's good for him. They can't trade him now, though. I mean, they absolutely need him on that second unit. I'm just saying they needed to lengthen out this roster. Absolutely. They need quality minutes when Steph's not in the game. They can't have it just be, oh my God, when's Steph coming back in? Although Reggie Miller, does he do it every game when he does a Warriors game? When's Steph come? That's the big question. When's Steph coming back in? And I scream to the TV every time. After the 6:30 mark, first stop, Reggie.
It would be one thing if they were saying, hey man, Steph should be coming in earlier, right? We know it's a 6-minute mark, but now's the time you bring him in. They legit don't know when he's coming back.
And like a casual fan, it's like, when do I pay attention
why
again?
Why is Steph not on the court? Yeah,
I want to see like, Steph.
It's your exactly. chance. Tell the readers.
And you know, LeBron wasn't in the game at the same time. It's like, LeBron's not in. You don't have to be saying, where's Steph? We know when Steph's coming back in. Oh, whatever.
The other thing is, and this is not, you know, we can get into the reasons for this, but they've been better this season in the non-Steph minutes. You know, their best pockets of the game right now have been start of the second. Usually start of the second, they really get a rhythm. Start of the fourth, it's more hit and miss.
Might have a little something to do with Damian Lee. Maybe a little Damian Lee effect off the bench right there.
We could talk about the starters. I mean, the starters are, I think, the worst high usage unit in the league right now.
We talked about the Wiseman minutes were terrible last night, no question. He's been struggling. They get him out, then the first unit looks pretty good. You know, like there's some mix and match there. But they got to play. I mean, I don't think, does anyone think that they should pull Wiseman out of the starting lineup? I don't.
Do they care about their future? Or do they care about their future?
I don't think he ever should have been starting. And I think I said that earlier on the podcast. I prefer him going up against backups and not just from the jump. Completely getting thrown to the wolves like that, but there are a bunch of considerations behind the scenes that I am not privy to, and it's easy for us to Monday morning quarterback these decisions. But I don't like it for him because the starting lineup has such terrible spacing. I'd like to see him either be in a lineup with good spacing or in a lineup where there's just not so much pressure on him and he's not screwing up a shot that would have gone to Steph Curry. I want one or the other, but this thing where he starts out and he's trying to roll, but the defense isn't really guarding Draymond, and maybe they'll start guarding Oubre after the last game, and that's something we need to get into, but they're not at this point. It's not really a great place for him to just explore what he can do and make mistakes.
The argument would be like, that's his spot for the next decade. So go get used to it. You're going to need to get used to playing next to Steph and Draymond because that's James Wiseman's spot. They're not going to pull him from the starting lineup. He is their starting center for the next decade, night to night, depending on how he's playing. Look, last time he only played 13 minutes. Correct choice by Steve Kerr not to go back to him. We all would agree with that. But James Wiseman just is the starting center. He's going to be at tip-off every time he's healthy for the next however long until they either trade him or he's not on the team, which might be in 2030. So that's just the reality.
I'll just say quick, somebody with the Warriors explained it to me that he is given roughly 15 minutes every night and everything else he has to earn. And I think that's the way you have to think about it.
Well, that's what the way they played a lot of their starting centers, frankly, through the years, right? I mean, it goes with the flow, and I'm gonna agree with Slater here. Like, this is his spot. If he can't figure out how to play with Steph and Draymond, then he's not going to be as good as they hope he's going to be. Just figure it out now, and if you lose 10 points every time he's out there, they won't. But if you do, you deal with it. And hopefully the next time it's you lose 5 points. And the next time you lose 2 points. The next time you gain 2 points. So I think they only gain by this in the long term. I don't think they lose anything in the long term with this. They are 7-6 with him as a starter. And you are presuming he's learning from this. You're presuming Draymond in his ear is going to keep, you know, is going to push him to another level. And we haven't seen it like since the first early rush. But I think you can still see the talent there. And you can still see why they're doing it.
This is the wrong team to be trying. Like, this team is going to value like struggle, like just the way they're set it up. You look at Eric Paschal, we've been talking about. They're seeing the benefit from him playing last year, like starting and being in the mix, and it wasn't even the role that he was supposed to be in, but it just works. You got dudes like Steph and Draymond, who, you know, struggled as rookies. Like, that's how it is. I don't think it's bad necessarily that this is not optimal for him to begin. Like, this whole thing was born in adversity, and that's how they think, that's how they operate. So I don't know why they would think it would be different for him. They probably think it's good for him to go through this.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Like, think about his best games. It was, you know, Nets, Bucks to start the season, when I don't think he had as much flowing through his mind. It was more just, hey, go be new and play out there. There's a lot of mop-up duty because they were getting blown out. He was great in mop-up duty because it was just like, hey, just shoot, kind of explore what you can do. You don't have to think about, like, the importance of, you know, angles on screens with Steph and playing with Draymond and all that. And then I think when he gets in that starting unit and they've thrown 25 different things at him pregame, and Draymond is in his ear, I think he's in his head a little bit. It just seems like he's overthinking out there, and he's better when he's not thinking. But the reality is, the most important date for James Wiseman in the next however long is opening night next season when Klay Thompson is back. They want to get him into the best version of a starting center on the Warriors by that date. And if that means he takes lumps now, or maybe they lose a few games now, while in the moment it might, you know, tick some people off and saying, hey, look, we're trying to win this season to get a playoff spot in Steph Curry's prime, why are they playing James Wiseman? Well, they're trying to win the title next year, right? They're trying to win the title 2 years from now. And getting James Wiseman as good as possible, either to trade or to start at center those next two seasons, is a lot more important than if they beat the Lakers to get the sixth seed instead of the seventh seed this season. That's just true.
But is that worth sacrificing the title this year, though?
That's the disconnect, right? The title's not there this year.
And also, what is playing Kevon Looney 30 minutes a game is going to get you, what, two more, three, eight, 15, 20 more wins? I don't think so. If you had Marquese Chris and he was playing great, okay, I could have that discussion. I think Looney is really good as what he is. His close halves, jump in there at the end of the first quarter, you know, you just like play spots. You're not playing him to space the floor. You're not playing him to, you know, individually lock down somebody. I think he would have as much trouble trying to go up against Marc Gasol as clearly Wiseman did. So I just don't know what the real other option here is, other than let the kid grow, see where he goes.
Looney's got the Steph telepathy, which is, I think, the main thing that he brings to the table on offense, and sometimes feels like the only thing.
Hit a corner three last night. What am I talking about?
That was a shocker. He's a spacer. That was a shocker. The thing with Wiseman, I do wonder, and it's so hard to know, not being behind the scenes, of how they're making these decisions. I really liked what he was bringing to the table, the three-point shot. I don't think he's a 40% three-point shooter like he is right now. That's small sample size stuff. But he could really add something to the spacing if he develops that. And I just wonder what's going on right now, why he just stopped taking it completely. So that one's a little strange.
I asked Steve about that.
Yes.
His explanation was that they're telling him to dive. They think that's what helps the, you know, offense most, when he just dives to the rim, because he takes the defense with him, and that has, you know, taken away opportunities where he's standing at the 3-point line. I kind of agree with you, Ethan. I think he needs to be chucking up 2 to 3 a game, probably, at least just for developmental purposes too.
I think he's better helped by developing that shot and gaining more confidence in it. So just my preference.
If nothing else, Ethan, he needs to know what's a long two and a three. Like, how many shots is he taking?
I'll settle for him catching the ball when there's nobody around.
I was going to say, you know, I think he's a little on the perimeter. It's a little rattling for him because people can reach in and take that ball out. Like, I don't know that he wants to be dribbling the ball or just have the ball where guards are swiping at him, because we're seeing he has trouble collecting on rebounds. He has trouble collecting it from passes. He has trouble, like, again, it's not a huge thing, but it's a thing. Like, when you're a high usage center and you can't hold on to the ball every other time, that's a big deal. And I think he's going through some of that where, wait a minute, if I try to get myself some space here, I could lose the ball. And he's going to have to figure that out. Then they're going to have to do some hands drills there or something.
That turnover in the first quarter where Steph throws it to him and there's nobody. I mean, what was shocking about that is there's nobody around him. Nobody around him. He's calling for the ball and looking right at Steph. So it's not like it caught him by surprise. And it just goes right through his hands. I mean, he's young. Every player has their flaws, but that one was, you just wonder, how do you improve that kind of thing? Because it's such a strange thing.
The one thing I've heard, you know, because I've asked the same thing, they say strength. They just need hand strength. It's a different kind. You know, we don't think about that. But, you know, what were the stress balls where guys are just...
So does he just... Because he's really built for a 19-year-old, but did he just never develop any grip strength? Did he never use the grips on the weights? Is that...
I don't know. I mean, I don't know that deeply. Yeah, I have, maybe I should explore it.
Let's get Brandon Payne on the call. We need some answers.
The one thing I even asked about, because, you know, people talk about, well, it's the Kwame Brown hands. Well, the Kwame Brown had small hands. He doesn't have that. So that's not an issue. It's just, apparently it's kind of strength. And then I think the other thing I really do, he wants to be great so bad. And he's trying to absorb all these lessons and put them on display. Yet, like we've talked about, he's played, I think, now at this point, like 14 games post-high school. He's just thinking about 25 different things.
I don't buy the small hands. Like, Steph has small hands. You could rocket it at him. Like, Steph can't palm a basketball, but he's going to catch it if you throw it at him. I mean, maybe this is a tangent to go off of, but it is... It's just a befuddling issue.
You know, and for a guy who gets in the mix a lot, that's the problem. Like, if he was just a guy who stands around and you're not really asking him to get in the mix, whatever. You know, Festus Ezeli wasn't good, but it wasn't like you're throwing the ball to Festus Ezeli every other possession. They are throwing it to Wiseman every other possession. He's contesting shots. But, you know, how many times have you seen the ball come off the backboard? He's there, and the ball just bounces off his hands. That's going to be a big difference maker for him if he's going to become a great player. He will not become a great player if he can't collect those balls or if he loses the ball. If guys don't want to pass to him, and that's what happened with Ezeli, essentially. Like, he was open, they're just not going to pass it to him. At some point, it'll happen with Wiseman. Not probably this season, but at some point, unless those hands get a lot better than they are now.
I just got to believe there's got to be some type of ability. You can't dribble like that and shoot like that and not catch the ball. Like, either you have soft hands or you don't. Like, it is a mystery. I don't even understand him in this ability to not catch the ball. Like, he has soft hands in every other part of the game except when he's got to grab the ball. It's weird. I don't know. Some of these things, I just don't know if you get. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. Like, you could work on it. You could probably get to a certain, like, minimum baseline. But some of it is probably instinctual. So that's what I wonder about him. Like, is this just who he is? Can you learn how to catch the ball?
We will be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Just picture what he might be in, we'll say 2025, he'll be 24 years old. I could definitely still see him bobbling the ball, but there's so much rookie stuff there, right? I mean, I do think some of these issues will always follow him, and maybe they will hinder him from becoming his best self, an all-NBA center. some of this, a lot of the mistakes are going to be sharpened over the next couple of seasons. They just are.
Yeah, and just it's decision making. Like, don't get yourself into a situation where you're going to turn the ball over. I think that's what Draymond was talking about him in the clip that we heard on TNT. He's like, I'm getting you the ball there. Stop. Then do something against Marc Gasol, which I thought was hilarious because he's telling them how much he likes that matchup with Marc Gasol standing right next to them. But like, don't like just keep going and charge. Like, you know, again, that Euro step was unbelievable last night. Well, you're just doing stuff to do stuff. You're not getting anywhere. You know, just like slow down a little bit, you know, just trust yourself instead of just rushing.
I kind of like that turnover from him just because at least it's aggression. At least it's him trying to do
the,
something.
The Euros?
Yeah.
I don't think aggression is his problem.
He wants to dunk it. He does want to dunk it.
I liked that when he got benched after it, he was visibly angry. I think that's a good sign.
He was aggressive on the Gatorade.
He was Euro stepping right into that
Gatorade.
He didn't bobble
the Gatorade.
Really, I think that matters. You don't want him lackadaisical after getting benched. You want it to mean something to him. And I know the announcer said it, but sometimes cliches are true. I think, look, honestly, my assessment of Wiseman, which is very turbulent, and if you follow Twitter, he's the future, the next KG, and now he's a bust. I think overall, actually, pretty good. I like the collection of skills that he has. This is a rough patch for him, but I think that these things can be worked on and can be improved, and ultimately they're on the clock. Wiseman's on the clock, and so is the Warriors development team because some of the draft picks have not worked out of late.
I had somebody compare him to first season Domantas Sabonis with the Thunder. And if you remember, he had flashes, but he struggled a little bit. He was on a team with win now aspirations. They were desperate without, you know, KD to still stay relevant. And it was a Russell Westbrook environment, which was weird for a center. Sabonis was so obsessed with wanting to immediately be good and be great. There was times he would go over the bench basically in near tears because he had just had a bad stint. And I think you see that with Wiseman. He just wants to be so good right away. And it took time for even Sabonis. And I'm not even necessarily comparing the games, although I do think there are some lefty big similarities between the two. Like you said, I do think his desire to be good in some ways might hurt him a bit now. You at least think he's going to maximize whatever he's going to become. I don't know if the flaws, how correctable they are, but I have a good feeling that he will do all he can to try to develop himself. He's going to, when summer comes, he's going to get in the gym, and whatever strength program on the hands or whatever program they put him on, he's going to do it. This is a big test for this Warriors developmental staff, who has been criticized, but they've been trying to develop the Jacob Evans of the world, the Jordan Pools of the world. This is a different task. It comes with a lot more pressure, but it comes with a lot more talent too. So it's going to be interesting.
On behalf of the Warriors player development staff, I will give you Damian Lee. I will give you Eric Paschal. On behalf of Chris DeMarco, it's like, are you not watching the work that we've done? Are you not seeing the progress of our middling players who've now become rotation players? What? No, anyway, I do think we need to – I want to transition to this Kelly Oubre in the second unit and – not just because I've been saying it will work, but mostly because did Steve Kerr basically just prove that he can change the starting lineup?
Well, he didn't change the starting lineup.
I know, but if Oubre works in the second unit, if Oubre works as a sixth man, he kind of cracked the door, right?
One thing, we all talk about starting lineups, and I understand we do, but it really isn't that important because you're subbing people out in halfway through the first quarter anyway. And so what we should talk about is lineups with Steph and without Steph. That's the important stuff. Who gets the minutes with Steph? Who is in the minutes without Steph? So they flip Wiggins and Oubre for that. That's like being out of the starting lineup in the Warriors, if you really think about it. And if you're taking, Oubre was getting most of the minutes with Steph, and that was not looking good. And if you break that up and he only gets half his minutes with Steph and half his minutes with the second unit with Paschal and Damian Lee and all the other Bazemore we're talking about, I think it is better for him. And it's essentially like changing the starting lineup because that's how the Warriors play it. It's with Steph and without Steph. Those are the two Warriors' most important units. And I think, yes, breaking that up and putting Wiggins with Steph And I think, who wrote it? Like, Wiggins plays essentially the same, no matter what. Was that you, Slater? I can't remember.
Yeah, I just basically said Andrew Wiggins is Andrew Wiggins at all times.
Yeah, he's not the guy like, oh my God, Andrew Wiggins is taking over this game now that Steph's out. He's done it at times, but he's done that with Steph. Like, he just does what he does, or doesn't do what he doesn't do, if you want to be the Minneapolis fan. Oubre's game's going to be affected a little bit more, I think. And also, as we talk about all the time, how much less painful is it for the Warriors for Oubre to miss a three when he's not playing with Steph as opposed to when he's with Steph? When he takes a shot anytime he's on the floor with Steph, you're like, what the hell? Get the ball to 30. And when he's not with 30, then it's like,
what
whatever.
What the hell? You know, get the ball to Wanamaker.
Come on, Wanamaker, go. It does take some pressure off of him, and I think this is Steve essentially changing the starting lineup, even though it's not the starting lineup.
But it's tough because if you don't take him out of the starting lineup, then Kelly Oubre is just going to lead the team in minutes. Like, it gets very tough to find.
Well, and also you want him to guard people too. Like, you're going to have to spot that a little bit because he was guarding LeBron to start. Now, they closed with Wiggins on LeBron. I thought that was interesting because didn't Wiggins guard LeBron last season? And then he flipped it, but then you had Wiggins guarding LeBron at the end.
They like tag teaming those two. That's their idea of... I feel like Steve Kerr views the starting lineup as like, what if we're in a first-round series with the Clippers? He wants, you know, Paul George and Kawhi Leonard to open the game looking at Andrew Wiggins and Paul George. Or in Andrew Wiggins and Kelly Oubre. They've been terrible. The starting lineups are terrible. Ethan has detailed the fit issues. But I get the idea. And like, you talked to... like. Mike Brown, for example, I've talked to him, and Mike Brown is very defensive-minded. He loves what Oubre brings defensively. That's disruption.
And as far as I know, Mike Brown does a lot of the rotation decisions, and that's his purview, so that makes sense. But, I mean, what does Lee...
No, Steve Kerr, man. It's all... Are you not on Twitter? Come on.
But Damian Lee, what does he have to... It is funny to me.
Isn't that interesting, Ethan? I was going to ask you that next. It's like, Oubre goes to the second unit, and it doesn't impact Lee's minutes at all. Like, even when... Oubre comes out of the game, Bazemore comes in.
And by the way, Oubre has one of the best games of his career, and Damian Lee still better in plus minus. It's amazing the impact a guy can have. I'm not saying that Damian Lee is the greatest player ever. It's just shooting, being a threat off the ball, and moving the ball are things he does well. And I just want to see more of that alongside Steph. Maybe it won't work out.
He's underrated as a defensive player. I mean, I don't think he was before, but I think this season, you know, he's getting deflections. He's like, I'll see a deflection. I'll think, oh, that was Oubre. And, oh, no, wait a minute. That was Damian Lee. I think Kerr still leans to the defensive side with this. Like, if you're going to another guy, as Marcus just said, it's usually Bazemore, and then it's Lee. But I can see that changing and altering it. If Oubre's minutes go down... If they're, you know, they think they can't put Bazemore in for 22 minutes, then I can see finally Lee getting 20 minutes. Like, he's averaging probably like 16 right now. He could close some games. He has closed some games. Obviously, he's won some games. But Kerr always leans to the defense. And you saw, like, Oubre gets the huge turnover on the inbounds play. Like, you know, there are reasons why defensive players matter at the end of games. There just are. Sometimes you don't want to lean that way, but Kerr's going to lean that way as much as he can. And that's why I would guess, I haven't asked him this, that it's always Oubre over Lee, always Bazemore mostly over Lee, because they can get out there and bug the other team. And he doesn't think that Lee can, I mean, Lee can't do it to their level, but I think he's getting better at it. I think he's definitely moving in that direction.
I got a question for you guys. So, I mean, like, part of the reason I think he's been able to soft play adjustments is because they're winning through a lot of this, right? They're 7-6. They're not, if they were like 4-9, I think there'd be a lot more pressure. Even within this, like, obviously the starting lineup's not working. What is your guys, you know, look into the future. 2 months from now, what is the starting lineup? Do you think it's still the same?
Yeah, I mean, not my preference.
I said two months. I didn't say 2 years.
Wow, Clay's coming back in 2 months? We buried the lead here.
2 years.
Bionic leg. I mean, look, I think that Lee should be in there in the starting lineup instead of Oubre, but it's not my call, and I don't anticipate that call being made.
Steve might call you and ask you, Ethan. How about that call? Was that call?
I think it'll be the same. I think, like TK was saying earlier, like the pseudo starting lineup, I think that should change, actually. I mean... You bring in Lee as that first sub. I think you got to do it for Steph. Like, literally for Steph. I think the only reason
this is an issue is because essentially you're saying, like, yo, Steph, suck it up, right? Like, yo, yeah, we're going to put our worst lineup with you, and you just got to make it work. And everybody else, you know, we'll try to work for it. But at some point, they got to say, let's do the thing for Steph. Because when he's going, it works for everybody. I feel like at some point that has to happen, right? They brought in Bazemore. He struggled the first half. You get him with Pascal on the court. You get him with Lee on the court. Somehow, like, he just finds a rhythm. So I think they got to do something just for the sake of getting their number one player off.
I just think Steph and Damian Lee play great together. And why not maximize that? Why not optimize that?
That is their best two-man combo so far this year.
Yep. And you know what? And you should. And I just don't think he's going to do it in the starting lineup. I think he's going to do it at the end of the first quarter.
Yeah, but that second, secondary, absolutely. Yep. Bring him in 6 minutes.
Yeah, that's where you're going to see it. And he hasn't done that so much yet.
No,
he puts Bazemore in there, and then he gets Oubre back in. And like, you know, he maneuvers it that way, but I do think that's where it could be. That, you know, they won a game, I think. I'm trying to remember now, with that end of first quarter, end of third quarter unit. And that was with Damian Lee and Steph. And that's with Pascal, by the way, because he subs in for Draymond at the end of the first and third quarters. Maybe Kerr will get back to it. He's kind of going away from it right now, but I agree. And I just don't think Kerr's going to change the starting lineup. I just think they have too much invested in Oubre. They want him in it mentally. They want him starting the game, bugging the opponent's best offensive player. They want him, you know, feeling like he's a huge contributor. You know how Kerr is about that. They want these guys to feel their contributors. They feel like they're going to be counted on. And then if you have to tweak his minutes, you tweak his minutes. But I just don't see that starting lineup moving around very much.
Part of the issue, though, is that Oubre plays like a sixth man. You know, you're not much of a passer, you might be a sixth man. You like to go 94 feet pressing up on the other guy in a way that is not sustainable when it comes to one's energy. That's kind of like a sixth man. You like to take some shots that aren't too efficient. It's kind of like a sixth man. Maybe I'm wrong and he really becomes a starter and it all meshes together. It's just hard to see it.
If he's a sixth man, he's playing minutes with Steph at the end of the first and third quarters, by the way. Like, that doesn't
change.
And
who's guarding Damian Lillard if he's the sixth man?
That's the problem. That is the problem, you know.
Like, who's guarding Kyrie?
And he's going to close games, right? He's going to close games. Kerr's going to close games with his best defensive unit if he possibly can. Now, do I think he needs to take 7 3-pointers? No. Especially when Steph is on the floor. He does not need to take those shots. He can take 2 dribbles, see where the defense is, and move it. But he's doing it, and he's playing it. And again, he can get into guys. He can guard LeBron. He can guard Kyrie. He can guard Lillard. You know, like, that is still something that Steve Kerr hugely, hugely valued. Like, was Andre Iguodala a starter on that team? No. Did he play starters minutes? Essentially, he did. So I think he's hoping for something similar out of Oubre. And if you don't stick with him, maybe you don't get anything out of him.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top 3 things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Even when he's crashing into the wall, he's pretty entertaining. So if Ethan is correct and he leads the team in minutes, they're not non-entertaining minutes. I mean, yeah. did he get a technical for blowing a kiss last night?
Yes, he literally did.
He leads the league in first down signs, right? Every time he gets a turnover, it's like, first down that way.
He's like a wide receiver, huh? He's like...
His defensive energy in that game was fantastic. I mean, just creating the turnovers right off the make.
I think that's what, like, Steve and Mike Brown obviously sees. Like,
he doesn't even have to play well defensively. He's just in the way because of his wingspan. Like, he could just be in the way. In his worst games, he could just be in the way. Now, sometimes he gets out of position because he's, like, really jumpy and, like, you know, it's like he had a bunch of sugar before the game.
He pisses people off. But if he just...
I know. Good. He could just be in the way just by getting in a defensive position and spreading his arms. Like, that's how, like, kind of wiry and long, like, he is. And if you just take that alone, like, Steph's wingspan is, like, minuscule, right? Like, he puts his arms out. The defense is like, yeah, I'm going around that, right? Oubre does it. You just move the ball. Like, that's a lot of space being covered. So even when he's not playing that well, he's still giving you something on defense. And that, I don't think that's going to change at all. Like, that's exactly what you want at the end of games. You want to line up in your set and you got the best players in the game at the top looking at the defense and they don't see openings. That's what you want, right? And he can do that and still get out to the three. And then if he's on it, now he's an extra plus. It makes sense why they're doing it. But yeah, I still think, man, you just got to do something for Steph. And maybe he's hot now, right? Maybe you throw out the 1-for-32. And, you know, maybe he's a 35% shooter the rest of the way, or maybe even 38. Who knows?
No,
and now he is.
Well, he needs to be about 40 to get a season percentage to about 35.
Yeah. Yeah. Ooh, no, you just got to throw that out, Slater. You got to throw that out.
That doesn't count now. Yeah, it doesn't count.
The combo shooting line of Anthony Davis and LeBron James last night, they both went 6-16. I think it was the first time all season they've both been under 20 points. That's informative to what the Warriors want to be defensively. They theoretically should have, if an engaged Draymond Green, a really good big defender for a guy like Davis, and Draymond was good in the second half defending him. And then they have this tag team on the wing that bothered LeBron last night. You think LeBron likes Kelly Oubre in his face, you know, jumping around and doing all that stuff. And then Wiggins is like a mute version of that. and that's a pretty good tag
team. It's like a sketch comedy Slater just came up with.
I know, like Wiggins is the mute.
It's the odd couple. It's Jay and Silent Bob.
I was going to say, Wiggins is the mute version of everything. Like, he's a mute version of this and a mute version of that because he just doesn't say anything.
That's Jay and Silent Wiggins. I do like that that reference.
By the way, I continue to like Wiggins' defense. He didn't get those blocks he usually gets, but he's swiping at it. He's going for it. You know, I'm still
guarding LeBron at the end of the game. LeBron didn't do anything at the end of the game. I mean, that's something. That tells
you. I'm still waiting for this player that I'm supposed to just hate watching that I was promised.
He's coming, man. He's coming.
Yeah,
Minnesota fans already.
Hey, by the way, they play the Wolves twice next week. That should be fun.
Very interesting. He did clank those two free throws, by the way.
But he had the biggest three threes in the game.
Oh, yeah.
Bang, bang, bang.
Back to back, too. Yeah.
Saved
Jesus. I throw up one Timberwolves fan thing, I get shouted down. My goodness.
Slater, do the Warriors need to win both of these or split? Are the Wolves in danger of having the worst record in the league? Like, is it too early to be worried about them losing too much? Since the pick is protected, right?
Let me explain to Warriors fans who have had this opinion of like, oh, well, we don't want them to have the worst record in the league. You do want them to have the worst record in the league, because even if you are the worst, even if you, like the Warriors last season where they had the worst record in the league, you still have an over 50% chance of being the fourth or fifth pick because it's flat in lottery odds. So if the Wolves end the season with the worst record, they would have, I think, like a 52% chance of having like the fifth pick and like a 14% chance of having the fourth pick. And that is the exact, you know, needle. You know, the Warriors are trying to thread this needle of as good as the pick can be without it being protected. And then even if somehow it gets protected, you get an unprotected 2022, and I assume the Wolves are not going to be good that next season either. So it's not like it's disaster if it gets protected.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, isn't this it's a better odds of getting four if they're one as opposed to four, right? Like, because you still could end up at seven if you're at
yes,
four.
You could be 7-8. I think if you're a Warriors fan, root for every single Wolves loss you can have, and particularly ones where it's Warriors against the Wolves.
Tell you what, if they get an unprotected Minnesota 2022 pick, that thing's going to be worth a lot in trades. It's going to be worth a lot as people look at where the Timberwolves might end up in 2022. So the Wolves losing is not a bad thing for the Warriors.
It almost, if it gets protected, extends the window of the asset, right? I mean, because at some point, if you get the pick, and let's say you get a seventh pick, and you decide, well, we're going to draft the player, maybe 2 months later, the player, you know, by the time we're in the middle of next season, the player just doesn't look like that valuable. Whereas if, like you said, if you get an unprotected 2022, you could throw it into trades with this theoretical idea of a superstar down the line. Although, I don't know, Ethan may or may not have the answer to this question. How good is the 2022 draft supposed to be?
I'm not sure about the answer of it.
What does Bogut say?
Just Tim's trying to attach the Minnesota unprotected pick to Eric Paschal and get Paschal out of here.
That's a good column. I like that one.
Start the Cade Cunningham return for a second year.
That would be just for everybody.
Cade Cunningham plus Eric.
Slater loved it.
If he wants to stay another year in Stillwater, I'm all on board. We beat Kansas the other day, by the way.
Slater was out there playing with him.
I can say he put
thousands of dollars in there. Yeah, he put thousands in there.
I paid that place for a degree, so. So, yeah, that's the one time I can say we. I will never say it for a pro team. I can say it for Oklahoma State. Come on.
What about Chet Holmgren? Does that interest anybody? Is that something that would be? Oh, that would be brutal, brutal for Wolves fans.
Is Bronny coming out 2022? Is Bronny coming out?
That would be so brutal for Wolves fans if they had the number one pick, but they had to give it away because it was unprotected, and it was Chet Holmgren from Minneapolis, Minnesota, as the number one pick. Have you guys seen this guy, by the way?
Yeah, he's like a 7'1" white dude who
pulls up like KD, basically.
Yeah, basically. He's super stiff kind of looking, but then he does kind of make some plays.
But he gets it done, though. It's weird. Like, it doesn't look like he should be able to do it, but he does it.
Sounds like Porzingis, like a Porzingis.
Yeah, I think that's a good call.
When I was watching, God, who was he going against? He was going against somebody else who was highly touted. I'm trying to remember.
In the high school game, right?
Yeah. He was going against somebody else who was highly touted. He gets the rebound, I think maybe after swatting the shot or really contesting it. And then he starts dribbling it up the floor, and you're going, whoa, I haven't really seen that too often. And then he pulls up in transition, and it looks KD like, and
it was Imani Bates.
Yeah. That's who it was. But yeah, and you just go, whoa, that's not common. You don't know the consistency. It's not like I've ever seen a full game from this guy, but that was, that was pretty shocking.
Sounds like we're having a James Wiseman conversation.
I mean, James Wiseman can't do that. I mean, God, that would be really, that might be bottom for Wolves fans. After everything else, if they lost the number one pick and it's Chet Holmgren out of Minneapolis, oof, that would be tough.
Is he going to a college? Do we know?
You should check out some of these highlights. I don't know what college he's going to. I'm not sure.
He's
going to
play in the NBL is what my understanding is.
Okay. G-League
good,
Elite.
Good. I did not even know this player.
Looks like he hasn't decided his college yet.
Oh, I think Gonzaga has been rumored for him.
I hear Oklahoma State.
Gonzaga. Gonzaga's a front runner.
Perfect for Gonzaga.
Do we have a chat where we can share this clip of what this guy can do? Anyway.
Yes, it's called Slack. You can figure
it out. Oh, yes. It's that one.
Anything else from...
Yeah. Let's not go too far ahead, huh?
Yeah, wow. I was going to say, let's go 2023. You got any 2023 picks?
It's like an episode of Back to the Future.
Hey, I do want to say this. We've kind of gone... I mean, it's a long... We've talked about this before, but Steph is as good as Steph's been. He's as good as he's been. There's no fall off there. The percentages maybe aren't great right now, but the stuff he's doing, that dribble behind the back, step back, right, step back, left over Anthony Davis, that was classic Steph Curry. He is as good as he's going to be. He's as good as he's been. Maybe not consistently, but in those moments, I'm saying he's as good as he's been. This is Steph Curry. We're seeing the real Steph Curry, and that is very good to see for any basketball fan. Silence? Wow.
Well, I'm looking for Chet Holmgren highlights. Steph Curry.
Chet Holmgren is as good as Steph Curry right now.
Steph Curry is yesterday's news.
Does Steph Curry fit the Chet Holmgren prime window? I'm not sure he does.
I will say this. He's looking really good off the dribble in isolation. I think that's something they could use more. I know they're trying to get the offense moving and they're going for the screen, but... Man, he's got some defenders in front of him so often that he could just take, take Dennis Schroeder, make them switch, do it every time until they do something. That also gets the offense moving. You could tell he doesn't pull that card out until he needs to. I think maybe he should do it earlier because he's looking really good off the dribble.
A hesitation, then a feed to Oubre for a dunk. You know, that connection. he's been pretty good in post-game interviews too, which I feel like when Draymond is really good in post-game interviews, it means he's like engaged in the season. And maybe
please tell me Steph is hit that Kobe mode where he's going to be like a quote machine now.
He's getting – I mean, the AC Law thing last night I thought was good.
Did he even know that you were on the call, Marcus, when he said that, by the way? Yeah, he did. Okay. I was like, it would be great if he just randomly said it out of the blue. And then Marcus wasn't there, but it's all good. It's all good. Always good with AC Law's mention.
The one last thing I wanted to talk about was an overrated Western Conference that is remains beyond the LA teams. It's like pretty meh. Oh, hey, I was preaching that.
Yeah, you were banging there. That same drum.
The Jazz right now are the third best team in the West, 9-4. I mean, Denver right now is 6-7, the like 11th seed. The Blazers are having massive injury issues. CJ McCollum broke his foot.
CJ McCollum.
Yeah, Nurkic broke his wrist. Both of those guys are out for an extended period of time. I mean, the Suns right now are the 4 seed at 7-5. Like, the Spurs are 8-6. Like, I don't see this, like, so challenging West.
Warriors are 2 games behind the number 3 seed. I don't know why people were saying this from the beginning, but it never was really that good. It was a bunch of pretty good teams that were always vulnerable. I don't know where all of a sudden Dallas was a juggernaut.
Well, bubble did a lot. Like, people, we started recalibrating, and oh my god,
they Phoenix made the first round of the playoffs. Yeah, like
yeah, Phoenix didn't even make the playoffs. And other teams made the first round. But you know, Damian Lillard looked incredible in the bubble. I think the bubble did skew a lot of this, and maybe some of those teams are piling up the injuries because they played in the bubble. We'll see. There was some wear and tear, but I think that was there. A lot of recalculations was based on all these young, great shooters in the West, and that was from the bubble. It wasn't from the regular season because you know we saw the regular season. It was a lot of it, I think, was from the bubble, and that was because some of it was going to play out and some of it wasn't going to play out. When we're seeing that.
Yeah, it's probably easier for certain players to perform in that environment where they're not really traveling, you're not in a big stadium. I mean, there are no fans now, but it's just a little bit different. I do think, in a way, the bubble was a metaphorical bubble, that you could only really glean so much from it. Not to say that the Laker championship is fake or anything like that. I mean, I think they were the best team in the end. But some of these performances, what's that? What do they say on the rearview mirror? That objects might be closer than they appear? Yeah, it's a little bit like that when it comes to the development of certain perimeter stars.
No doubt. All right, I believe we're past 50 minutes in.
Let's wrap it up.
But hold on. Can we talk about the 2023 number one pick?
Hey, I'm looking for
Mike Holmgren. Somebody's going to draft Mike Holmgren. Wow.
What if he was Mike Holmgren's son? And he had a 7'1" probably scrawny son.
Right, Spurs, Knicks, Jazz, Wolves. I mean, the Jazz are tough, but overall, 4 of those are at home. They need to go at minimum 3-2 in this stretch. And if they want to really kind of start to emerge in this like playoff abyss in the West, they should go 4-1, at least.
Yeah, they should. I don't think they're gonna, but 3-2.
Yeah, I'm gonna go 3-2.
3-2 will be fine, and those two wins over the Minnesota will be sweet for them. But
Towns, by the way, who sadly has COVID.
I'd say 3-2, 4-1 would be a bonus, and they go 2-3, that would be a disappointment.
Who's the one they lose to?
Well, they're gonna lose to Utah, you would assume.
Yeah, I think they might lose to the Spurs.
Spurs
would be good. If they do win that Spurs game, then suddenly you're going get to that 4-1 in that 5-game stretch because you should beat the Knicks, and like you said, if you could 2-0 the Wolves at home, that has like a double bonus.
We'll see. We'll
talk. Hey man, don't sleep on the 7-8 Knicks. The number 6 team in the East. Don't sleep on
them. Thibodeau got them grinding.
Yeah, Obi topping.
They'll be dust. They'll be dust after a while. Great show, fellas. We are out of here. Until next time.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.